Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey everyone, I'm Ian DeBorja, and welcome to season 2 of IMDb's Movies That Changed My Life, a podcast where your favorite stars break down the films that made them who they are today. This week's guest is actor Joel Kinnaman. You may know Joel as Takeshi Kovacs in Altered Carbon or Rick Flagg in Suicide Squad, but he'll speak to me today about his role as Edward Baldwin in Apple TV Plus's For All Mankind. Joel and I talk about his 80s shoulder pads in For All Mankind Season 2, his interest in directing a film in the future, and the 3 movies that changed his life. Once again, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to give us a star rating and leave a review because every single one counts. Thanks again for listening. Here's Movies That Changed My Life with Joel Kinnaman. Joel, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. I got a chance to watch a bit of season 2 of For All Mankind, and it picks up in such an awesome way. But before we get to that, how's it going today?
Day going good. Been talking, yapping away. A little bit tired on my own voice, but I still got a little bit in the tank. So
that's good. So we're going to chat about For All Mankind Season 2 in just a little bit, but let's kick off the show by talking about the 3 movies that changed your life. Let's kick it off with the 1976 classic Taxi Driver. It has an 8.3 out of 10 with 725,000 ratings on IMDb, directed by Martin Scorsese, written by Paul Schrader, starring Robert De Niro, Jodie Foster, and Sybil Shepherd. So talk to us. When was the first time you watched Taxi Driver, and what was your initial reactions to it?
I think I'd seen it when I was a little bit younger, when I was 17, 18, something like that, and didn't really, liked it, but didn't sort of see the great, I think it had less action in it than I was hoping. And then I revisited it when I had started to become an actor, and then when I was paying attention to it in a different way and was just mesmerized by De Niro's performance and how how they told the story of this character, and there was just so many colors there. And then he was such a scary, psychotic dude, but you were there with him at every step of the way, and it was and I just started thinking like how fun it would be to play a character like that and to have that concentration of a filmmaker to tell the story of a character in that way. It became like a shining light of what I want to do with my life.
Yeah. So many people talk about getting inspiration from De Niro's performance in Taxi Driver. They always talk about the "you talking to me" scene, as that's one of the most iconic scenes in the film, but also just like in film history. So I'm wondering, are there any other scenes in Taxi Driver that stand out to you as an actor, that's something that inspires you or makes you want to, push harder in your performances?
Yeah, I love the scene when they're at the cafe and he's talking to Jodie Foster, and also the way that they prepared for that scene is something that I stole that way of working whenever I work with kids. So what De Niro did, he just started rehearsing with her over and over and over again in different locations. He would just take her you know, walking and going for a drive, and they would just like run the scene over and over again. And so she knew this scene by heart, inside out. And then he would start the scene and then start improvising, you know, taking in something that was happening. If a waiter came in, if they sat at a cafe or, you know, and then he would go back to the scene. So what he did was he sort of taught her how to improvise in that. And I think that a lot of actors, they have this misconception and they think that, you know, you improvise out of necessity because you haven't prepared enough, or it's a way to, you know, give a good performance, even though you haven't prepared enough. To me, it's the complete opposite. You go in and overly prepare, and it gives you the freedom to improvise because you know the scene so well, you know the lines inside out. So, and when you do that, you can divert, and you have the complete freedom to incorporate whatever the environment around you, the people around you, any mistake that happens, you can completely incorporate that, and then have the freedom and the knowledge to just immediately go back into the scene and the narrative of the scene, and then it becomes usable. And so I stole that way of working, and I whenever I work with kids, and even with, you know, I haven't done that in the U.S., but before I moved from Sweden, I did a couple of movies where we work with amateurs, and you just, you know, but people come in playing themselves. You know, you have like a Yugoslavian gangster, you know, he's just himself. He doesn't know anything about acting. He knows how to be himself. And then I would rehearse in the same way with an actor like that. So also sort of teach them how to improvise, and it's pretty effective.
I mean, that's fascinating and not that surprising to me, because I see the quiet anger that De Niro has in Taxi Driver a lot in your own work. And so when I saw that you had Taxi Driver on your list, it all just like made complete sense to me.
And what he does so well often is, you know, he finds the contrast of the character. You know, he's not playing the psycho. He's not playing the psycho. He's playing the guy that is like desperately trying to connect. And you know, and then of course the writing really serves that, but it's, and I did the same thing on stage when I played Raskolnikov. You know, you don't play a guy that is, you know, that is about to become schizophrenic and, you know, and is crazy. You're playing a guy that's like really just trying to keep it together and trying to connect with people. And then, you know, because of how his mind is wired and because of the results of his actions, is not really able to. But it's the struggle to try to be nice, to try to be kind and connect, and then not being able to. That's what makes it interesting and a you know, good performance.
Yeah. Last question on Taxi Driver. Do you think the ending is a fantasy, or do you think that is what actually happened?
You know, I think it's what really happened. And then I think, you know, sometimes the story of an artwork can sometimes be more fantastic than the actual artwork. And I think that, you know, that would in some way be his, you know, dying dream or whatever. I think that's what art is. It's something that melds with our imagination, and then we, as a viewer, we create something as well. We're a co-creator of the art that we are presented with. And so that, you know, that's, there is no answer to that. There is no correct or incorrect answer to that. It is what we feel as a viewer, as a, you know, as a participant in that artwork.
Perfectly said. So before we go to your next two movies, let's spend some time to chat a little bit about For All Mankind Season 2. So something that struck me about the Season 1 finale of the show is that in the post-credits scene, when we get to see the dragon fly out of the water, the song Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears plays over it. And so for a show that is so firmly set in the 60s, you know, the clothes, the music, the design, then out of nowhere comes this classic 80s song. You know, at the time, I didn't really think much of it. But now that we've learned Season 2 starts in the 80s, in retrospect, that was actually such a great teaser. So what can you tell us about what happens in between the 10, 13-year time jump for your character and the rest of the show?
Yeah, so, you know, the show starts out in the late 60s and you know, right in the the height of the space race to the moon. And then, you know, this alternate timeline is created and our journey on this show begins in this alternate history. And at the end of it, you know, we have bases on the moon and the Soviets has bases on the moon and the Cold War is slowly seeping into the space arena. And even though, you know, there's new technology that is sort of being developed, in our show, the innovation starts to ramp up, but we're still pretty closely tied to, you know, the real history. When we jump 10 years further, and now we're in the middle of the new 80s, then these alternate timelines have really our alternate timelines really starts to diverge from real history, and we can see the results of this. You know, the much more rampant pace of innovation. We have new technology. We have technology in the mid 80s that we otherwise didn't see until like the 2000s. And
you also get a nice sweater wardrobe and sweater upgrades throughout the 80s as well.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. It's the fashion of Ed Baldwin is something that, you know, should always be left in the 80s, no matter what timeline you're on. those shoulder pads, you know, they look really particularly good on me because I got pretty wide shoulders. So, you know, you put some shoulder pads on there, it's profound. It's a profound experience for the viewer.
That is true. Something else that's profound in the show is that your character has so many intense moments throughout season one, but then we pick up in the beginning of season two and we see that you're now stuck in an office, you're practicing putting while watching news in the bar. So what was that like for you as an actor to have such a shift in character?
Yeah, so, you know, in the end of the first season, the Baldwin family goes through this, you know, what would for most be the ultimate tragedy of a family and for a father. And not just do they go through this ultimate tragedy, he's stuck on the moon alone while it happens and he can't be there for his wife. And so I think what we discover in the beginning when we come back in the beginning of the second season is that he has made some sacrifices. He's made a vow to his family that if something were ever to happen again, he'd be damn sure to be there. And this has had the result of also finding some kind of inner peace and it seems to be some kind of happiness. And of course, you know, it's not like those wounds aren't absolutely prevalent. They're there. They're just not on the surface. And I really liked the writing and the way that they described how these 10 years have passed and how the pain, of course, is right there always, but you just can't see it. And then it comes out in ways that you just didn't expect. And I just think that's how life is. It doesn't always play out as a ABC. Life and people and their reactions, they don't always follow the roadmap.
Yeah. The unspoken pain of you and your family and, you know, things not following the roadmap are definitely things fans could look forward to throughout season two of For All Mankind, which is coming to Apple TV Plus on February 19th. And if you haven't seen it yet, definitely go back and check it out now. Come for the space and stay for the intense family drama and incredible character development.
I love that. I love the way you put that. That was very nice.
Well, I'm glad.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Let's move on to your second film, which happens to be one of my favorite films, 1995's Lan. It has an 8.1 out of 10 with 150,000 ratings on IMDb, written and directed by Matthew Kasovitz, starring Vincent Cassel, Hubert Kund, and Saeed Taghmawi. The film follows three friends over the course of 24 hours following a riot in the suburbs of Paris. Like I said, I love this movie, so please talk to us about Lan.
Yeah, so I saw this sort of in the same period, you know, it was also something I think I'd seen briefly, but then I really like dove into it while I was in acting school. So I was probably around like 20, 21. Yeah, it's a beautiful movie. It actually, like, the Swedish title is like While We're Falling. And I think the Swedish title is actually, in Swedish, it sounds really beautiful too. It's actually a better title than the original title because it references one of the characters' speech. Yeah, it's very relevant now actually because it starts the movie starts the day after a racially incited riot in one of the suburbs in Paris, outside of Paris, and it's about these three guys. There's this gun that's been lost. A cop has lost a gun, and it's a big thing in a European country where we don't have 300 million guns. and it is one of these kind of films where, you know, you have a couple of actors, you know, like Vincent Cassel, he was, you know, an up and coming actor in France. And then the absolute majority of people are just playing themselves. But Matthew Kasovitz and the photographer, like the photography in this movie is also incredible. Like the movie's in black and white, but it's in no way, shape or form dull or dry. It is an artistic masterpiece. I feel like it's like an urban masterpiece. And for a long time, it was like sort of the dream to do something like this, to be a part of a movie like this. I think the closest I came to was Snabba Cash, Easy Money, a Swedish film that I did in 2009, which sort of had the same. You know, we mixed a lot of amateurs and professionals in there, but you know, it's that's a much more, you know, film with a straighter narrative. But it's a film I just became obsessed with. I've probably seen it, you know, 25, 30 times.
Wow.
And I was obsessed with the way that they worked on that film as well. They just lived out there in this suburb in France and just immersed themselves with it. And I mean, it took Matthew Kasovitz to extreme heights, and then, I don't know what happened to him, but he made this film, and you know, it'll forever be in film history.
Agreed. I mean, everything about the movie is incredible. The way Kasovitz captures the lives of these three young men is like just unbelievable. So I know you spent a lot of time when you were younger. You spent a lot of time traveling the world. You lived in different parts of Europe, South America, here in the United States. So I'm actually curious, do you have a connection to this film because you've gotten to meet so many different people from different walks of life, different parts of the world? And when you watch this movie, you sort of see people and you're like, oh, like I know this guy.
No, it's a very European story. So it's not so much, something that I felt connected to from my travels, but more sort of from growing up in Sweden. And like, I grew up on the south side of Stockholm, which was, you know, somewhat working class when I grew up, but it wasn't like, you know, in the suburbs, like in the Swedish hoods. And you know, we have all over Europe, you have the same kind of dynamic in with different kind of volume of the problem, or, you know, different kind of intensity of the problem. Of immigrant populations being sort of shut out of the rest of society and creating this sort of tension between immigrants and native-borns. And I grew up going to school with, because my dad was American, I grew up with, it was a public school, but with education was in English. All my classmates were from all over the world, like from, you know, from Africa and from India and from, so I grew up with immigrants, And when we played soccer during the breaks in school, it was like us against the Swedes. So I spent a lot of time out in a lot of different suburbs, and like a lot of my groups of friends, my group of friends were from the suburbs. So so when I saw this film, it really connected to what I was seeing on a day to day. Even though in France it was much more intense, but you know, we had these kind of riots in Sweden, very similar, just like what was it now? Like maybe 5 years ago?
Yeah. And that just highlights how eerily relevant the film is. I mean, you could have made this film last year, 2 years ago, and it still makes sense, which, I mean, honestly, is quite sad. But it really is a beautiful film. And if you haven't seen it before, I highly recommend everyone go watch it.
Yeah, you should definitely go see it. I think it's called Hate in English, right?
Yeah, The Hate.
Yeah, The Hate, yeah.
All right, now let's go to your last pick, which is 1996's Pusher. It has a 7.4 out of 10 with 35,000 ratings on IMDb, directed by Nicholas Winding Refn and written by Jens Dahl and Nicholas Winding Refn, starring Kim Bodnia, Zlato Burek, Laura Dreisbach, and Mads Mikkelsen. This was Refn's first film, and people probably know that name now from Drive and Neon Demon, but talk to us about Pusher.
Yeah, so this film sort of showed us in Sweden that, like, oh, wow, we can make gangster movies. Like, we should be able to make gangster movies, too. Because up until this point, we had not seen the sort of underworld or a criminal society in Scandinavia portrayed in any kind of realistic shape. It was the people that made the films about this, it was always from, like, the cop's perspective. And it was always... super hokey. The criminals were always portrayed as hokey, and it wasn't based in reality at all. So either it was like pretty hokey or pretty racist. And when Pusher came out, it was just being blasted into reality, and in a way with that just had such an intensity and style, and it had like this coolness to it, but it wasn't trying to be cool. It was just. It was just an intensity to the performances, to the photography. It sort of came off the heels of Lars von Trier's Dogma movement, and so it had that. You know, this was definitely not a Dogma movie, but it sort of had that handheld, very, you know, a lot of it shot with existing light, and you know, you don't really pay attention to. You know, it's very documentary in its way. I still like those kind of movies. To me, that's never gone out of style. And and just the performances were just so on point, and the world that was described just felt so realistic and complex. So I was completely blown away by it. I actually love the second and third. It's a trilogy, and The Pusher. The second one focuses on Mads Mikkelsen's character. It might be my favorite, actually, but it's really hard to pick. And the third one is very gruesome. It focuses on Slatko Buric's character. You know, Slatko. They're all phenomenal actors. You know, top shelf European actors. And in these roles, it's just a joy to watch. I've seen them, you know, dozens of times, each of them. And it really made us, I don't think that our movie, Snabba Cash, would have been made or looked like it would if it hadn't been for Pusher. It definitely made us understand that, oh, we can do this too.
Yeah, I love hearing that. When indie movies inspire young actors and directors just to make more films, you know, it's really like a cyclical nature of inspiration. Like, I'm sure Refn saw something that inspired him to make Pusher, and then it inspired you. So just keeping people, you know, making more and more interesting, unique pieces of film. But I actually haven't seen the rest of the trilogy, so I need to go back and watch that.
Oh, you got to see it. You got to see it. Yeah.
So it's funny. I mean, the way you speak about these movies and how you speak about the craft, it seems like you should be a director. Like, I'm surprised I haven't seen a director's credit on your IMDb page yet. has that crossed your mind?
It has. It has. I think for the past 15 years, I've said, in 5 years.
Right. Right.
Or at least the last 10 years. I probably will direct at some point. I become more and more... intrigued by the behind the scenes And I think I gain more and more understanding, and you're in such a privileged position as an actor, because you get to work with all these fantastic directors. So you get to see different ways of working, different types of leadership. And it's something that takes so much time. So and I love acting. I really love, I enjoy it so much. And I feel like I'm just hitting my stride as an actor. So
yeah, I'm not encouraging you to quit acting.
No.
Let the record show that I'm not asking him to do that, please.
I think in my future there will definitely be there's definitely something I will want to do, but yeah, we'll see when.
Well, I'll be sure to keep an eye out for that. So final question here. We have Taxi Driver, Laen, and Pusher. Do you see a through line between the three films as to why you wanted to chat about these today?
I mean, yeah, they all kind of deal with, you know, dark, messed up masculinity and sort of in a realm, a crime realm. I think it was my instep to acting in general. I had a period of my life from when I was, 13 to 16, 17, when I, even earlier, like maybe 11, 12 to 16, 17, where I was, kind of in trouble, and I spent a lot of time. All my friends from that time period went on to become criminals at, various levels of success. And that period, there was so much trauma and anxiety and manipulation and, that there was so much darkness connected to that time in my life. So, there's something from that time that's almost in every role I do. At some level. I guess I got to move on,
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, so, we find new things and I find new things that inspire me, but I think that was my way in and my way into the profession and my interest into film, that it could, portray these things that I felt like I'd seen and experienced in some shape or form. And it really fueled my interest. And it also, the beautiful thing about acting for me, the thing that struck me right when I got started, that I could use these traumatic, these kind of the worst experiences of my life, they all of a sudden became an asset. And it was something that actually made me good. Mm. And I became good because of I had those experiences.
Right.
And that made me understand that, acting was something that a craft that I really wanted to pursue, and it propelled me into it to go deeper.
Well, perfect. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. I really enjoyed your selections, and I'm glad you introduced me to Pusher. I'd never seen that before, and I definitely want to see the rest of the trilogy now.
Awesome.
But once again, For All Mankind Season 2 is coming February 19th to Apple TV Plus. Again, come for the space and stay for the family drama and the amazing acting. Yeah, chef kiss, exactly. Thank you again, and I appreciate hanging out with you. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Ian. It was great talking to you.
Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to head over to imdb.com/podcasts for more content on Joel and to easily add the movies that changed his life to your IMDb watchlist.